helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. There's an old Jack Benny bit that goes like this.
Don't make a move. This is a stick-up.
What?
You heard me.
Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. Now, come on. Your money or your life? Look, bud. I said your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
Now, hopefully very few of us will ever be in such a situation. However, many Americans today are being held up. Not by a thief on the street, but by our cities, towns, counties, along with our state and federal governments. They may use different methods and invoke different laws, but what they are doing is still theft. And since these governments have armed personnel to enforce their criminal activities, well, you could easily call what they are doing a stick-up. So when government actors ask you,
your money or your life,
don't just think it over. Ask yourself, which would you rather give up, their money or your freedom? Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here, the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am so glad you could join me today. You know, I have an article I want to play for you because it really is what got the ball rolling with this. And the idea of what are referred to as excess proceeds, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But really, all I could think of as I was preparing this episode was that Jack Benny bit. And, you know, Jack Benny's, you know, his character is very cheap and, you know, gee, would I rather die or give up my money? But it made me think, how cheap are the American people? Would we willingly give up our freedom in order to get their money? So I've got a couple of topics we're covering today. Part of it is the theft using excess proceeds, but also the bribery and how government uses that to steal our liberty, our freedom, our rights from us. We're all familiar with the fact that our property is taxed. And if you don't pay your taxes, it's going to cost you. But how far can a city or town or any government agent, for that matter, go to collect your taxes? In 2014, after several personal and business issues, Alan DiPietro purchased some property straddling Stowe and Bolton, Massachusetts, for the purpose of raising alpacas. What ensued was several years of battle between Mr. DiPietro and the town of Bolton over his use of his own land. While what was described in Mr. DiPietro's lawsuit was pretty terrible, I want to focus on the foreclosure of the property. After purchasing his property, Mr. DiPietro was repeatedly frustrated in his attempts to make money from it by the town of Bolton and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The actions of the town of Bolton and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts made it impossible for Mr. DiPietro to pay the taxes he owed on his property. Eventually, the Massachusetts Superior Court found that Mr. DiPietro owed the town of Bolton approximately $60,000 in taxes, interest, fines, and legal fees. Now, the town of Bolton foreclosed on his property, which, according to Mr. DiPietro's lawsuit, was worth at least $370,000. Now, if that sounds like theft to you, Mr. DiPietro agrees, which is why he filed suit in the United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts. Under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, the government may not engage in a physical appropriation of property without providing just compensation. This self-executing prohibition is incorporated against the states through the 14th Amendment and further made enforceable by 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, which authorizes a private right of action against persons acting under the color of law who have deprived individuals of their federally protected rights. The Fifth Amendment claim in this isn't quite correct. The Fifth Amendment reads, "Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." The town of Bolton is not taking Mr. DiPietro's property for public use, but in payment of a debt. The claim that the town of Bolton is taking the excess proceeds from the foreclosure on Mr. DiPietro's property is taking it for public use doesn't quite fit either, since that was not the purpose of the taking.
The claim that the Fifth Amendment's prohibition only applies to the states of the 14th Amendment is a legal fiction I have dealt with many times here at the Constitution Study. As the supreme law of the land, the states are just as bound to the Constitution as the federal government. The Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2, reads, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding." Title 42, Section 1983 of the United States Code is the federal law allowing people to sue anyone who deprives them of their rights protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States under color of law. This ensures that Mr. DiPietro has standing in federal court to sue. For having taken the surplus value of Mr. DiPietro's property, Bolton, a state actor, is liable under the Fifth Amendment's Takings Clause to pay just compensation to Mr. DiPietro for the surplus value of his property. As I've pointed out previously, what the town of Bolton did was not a takings under the Fifth Amendment, since it did not take the excess proceeds for the purpose of public use. In my mind, there is a clause in the Fifth Amendment that better fits what the town of Bolton is doing to Mr. DiPietro. Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The court said that Mr. DiPietro owed the town of Bolton $60,000, but they have deprived him of the $310,000 in equity he had in the property without due process of law. That means the town of Bolton has deprived Mr. DiPietro of his property, the $310,000 of equity he had in his land, without due process of law. Now, while the town did follow due process to collect their $60,000 debt, that does not entitle them to keep the change. In fact, there is a clause in the Constitution that makes that very point. The Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibits punitive fines or forfeitures grossly disproportionate to the offense they are designed to punish. Well, that is a fairly accurate paraphrase of the Eighth Amendment, which reads, "Excess bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted." Is what the town of Bolton did a violation of the Eighth Amendment's prohibition against excessive fines? The tax statute already allows Bolton to collect costs and 16% interest on the debt. By taking and keeping at least $31,000 more than the taxes, interest, and fees, Bolton, under color of state law, excessively punished Mr. DiPietro. Yes, Mr. Bolton owed $60,000, but by collecting $370,000 to pay a $60,000 debt, the town has effectively fined him $310,000 for not paying his $60,000 debt. That is a fine 2.5 times larger than the debt, and quite excessive to any reasonable observer. But these actions are not only violations of the Constitution of the United States, but of the Massachusetts Constitution as well. Under Part 1, Article 10 of the Declaration of Rights in the Massachusetts Constitution, the government may not take private property for public use without reasonable compensation being paid or secured in a manner prescribed by law. Since I've already made my argument regarding the Takings Clause in regard to the Constitution of the United States, there's no reason it would be different at the state level. What I found interesting is the language of the Massachusetts Constitution's version of the Due Process Clause. "And no subject shall be arrested, imprisoned, despoiled, or deprived of his property, immunities, or privileges, put out of the protection of law, exiled, or deprived of his life, liberty, or estate, but by the judgment of his peers or the law of the land." The judgment of Mr. DiPietro's peers was that he owed $60,000, not the $370,000 of property the town of Bolton confiscated. The Massachusetts Constitution also includes an excessive fines clause. Part 1, Article 26 of the Massachusetts Constitution's Declaration of Rights protects against excessive fines and cruel or unusual punishment. This is where the 14th Amendment actually comes into play, which reads, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law." See, according to the suit, the tax laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts allows the town of Bolton to confiscate property far in excess of the judgment and keep the proceeds from any sale. This law not only claims to allow the town of Bolton to deprive Mr. DiPietro of his property without due process of law, But as a tax debtor, he's also denied the equal protection of the laws, both state and federal, against the deprivation of property and excessive fines. There is one other item in this case that caught my attention. Mr. DiPietro hereby demands a jury trial on all issues, triable by jury as a matter of right. The Seventh Amendment not only protects Mr. DiPietro's right to a jury trial, but the judgment of that jury as well. In suits of common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by a jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. This case is far from over. Not only does Mr. DiPietro have the trial of the district court to endure, but in my mind, it's likely this case may go to the Circuit Court of Appeals as well. After all that Mr. DiPietro has been put through according to his suit, I do not envy him, but I do applaud his willingness to stand up for what is right and just. Like so many other parts of the law, tax foreclosure laws have a legitimate purpose, but have been twisted into a judicial nightmare. If taxing authorities can foreclose and confiscate property far in excess of any debt owed without returning the excess proceeds, well, not only can they become criminal entities, but they are financially incented to do so. In his suit, Mr. DiPietro alleges that the town of Bolton repeatedly interfered with his ability to profitably use his property, sell his property, and even make arrangements to settle his debt. Could it be that the town of Bolton, with a financial interest in foreclosing on the property, was incented to prevent Mr. DiPietro from paying his debt? Mr. DiPietro also claims that the town colluded with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to prevent Mr. DiPietro from profitably using his property. Does that make the Commonwealth culpable as well? I often hear people say that we don't own our property, but merely rent it from the government. Well, if your property can be taken to pay a debt that is a fraction of the value of the property, well, then that statement may be true. What is described in this lawsuit does not sound like a free people with the right to enjoy, defend, and protect their property. From the Massachusetts Constitution, we read, "All people are born free and equal and have certain natural, essential, and unalienable rights, among which may be reckoned the right of enjoying and defending their lives and liberty, that of acquiring, possessing, and protecting property, in fine, that of seeking and obtaining their safety and happiness." This sounds more like a fiefdom, where the local potentate owns the land and dispenses favors rather than justice. Isn't it sad how one of the birthplaces of liberty in this country has fallen into feudalism? Will the other 49 states learn from their debasement?
So yeah, I can just picture Mr. DiPietro and the town of Bolton saying, "Give us all your land, all the money, all the value you have in it, or we're going to ruin your life." If half of what Mr. DiPietro describes in his lawsuit is true, well, that's essentially what they did. But again, my focus wasn't, I wanted to focus strictly on the excess proceeds, because this is not a unique situation. This apparently happens across the country quite regularly, where the cities and towns and counties are collecting vast proceeds beyond what they're owed, and the law claims to allow them to do that. Now, I want to follow Mr. DiPietro's suit, again, because I find it interesting, but this is going to take a while. But it makes me think, how many people have, they basically handed over their money because they weren't prepared to have their lives ruined by these government actors? And how many did so because they thought they were alone? See, that's the other part that I keep wanting people to remember. We see these people and we go, "Well, why didn't they fight? Why didn't they fight?" Well, maybe they didn't fight because they thought they'd be fighting alone. They thought nobody had their back. And that, to me, is a truly sad state of affairs when people don't believe that their neighbors have their back. I want to talk a little bit more about that later in the program. And I've got some other examples of this type of theft, but I have to take a break. But before I do, I want you to head over to constitutionstudy.com. That's where you can find more articles and other tools that you can help you with your study. One of them is the Constitution Study Planner, or the Planning Wizard. It's a simple tool. You can find it on the homepage at constitutionstudy.com, and you answer a few questions, and then the system will start generating emails to based on your answers to help you put together, what do I do next? And I'm frequently asked, now what do I do? Well, again, simple questions. You know, when was the last time you read the Constitution? Did you find it easy or difficult? You know, what are your plans? What are your goals? And then, again, the system will start sending you emails and say, hey, have you considered this? And no, it's not simply me trying to sell my books. Yes, I offer my books as part of that. But very often it may just be, hey, maybe you just want to go to this website and actually sit down and read the Constitution. There's free stuff as well as fee stuff, because this is about helping people understand their rights and being able to defend and assert them. Now, also, if you wouldn't mind, have you checked out Healthy Cell? I mean, if you listen to the Constitution today, I talk about it all the time, including one of their products called REM Sleep. Now, me, I generally sleep pretty well. My wife, my daughter, not so much. But when I travel, I also have a hard time sleeping. And if I don't know about you, you get up in the morning tired, it just kind of takes a whole day out of you. Now, REM Sleep by Healthy Cell is the only sleep supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep. It means it helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deeply so you can wake up refreshed and ready to attack the day. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So please go to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together, and include REM Sleep or any of their great products. Use the code OUTLOUD. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared. Sea level rise has not been unusual. And extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan, a plan based on real science that responds to the real world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Boy, my tongue is a little tied at the moment. So the first part of the program, we were talking about, you know, our money, their money or our freedom. And the first segment, I talked about a lawsuit in Massachusetts involving what are called excess proceeds. The idea that a taxing authority that you owe a debt to in lieu of taxes can not only foreclose on your property, but they can keep the excess proceeds. So that sort of theft is one. There's another form of theft that we need to consider, both of which involve incentives to different government actors. And this is a truly evil process known as civil asset forfeiture. This is another example of, you know, lawyers just kind of twisting the law to get to the outcome that they want. And it truly is, in my realm, it truly is disgusting. But here's what happened, as I understand it. See, back, I think it was in the 80s, when, you know, we had all the war on drugs, and we were doing everything we could to start to attack these especially these cartels, these large criminal enterprises. And someone came up with the brilliant idea, says, hey, let's hit them in the pocketbook. What if we could find a way to grab their ill-gotten gains, right? And the idea being, you know, hey, if you're a drug kingpin and you've taken your money and you've bought homes and cars and boats and planes, what if we could legally forfeit your ownership of those property because it was gotten through illegal gains? And at first it sounds great, right? So you've got the drug kingpin, they've made millions of dollars, they've got all these goodies. What if the state could seize that property, sell it, and then use the drug kingpin's money to fight crime? Kind of a hoist on your own petard type scenario. You've made all this money, now it's going to be used to fight the very crime that you were committing. Sounds wonderful. But as so often happens with humans and with human nature, it didn't stay that way. A lot of states, a lot of cities have these civil asset forfeiture laws. And the idea goes something like this. You encounter law enforcement for whatever reason, and law enforcement has reason to believe that you have ill-gotten gains. So you have assets, civilian assets, that they believe you've gotten illegally. Then they say, well, you forfeit them, and we're going to take them, and we're going to use part or all of that money to fund law enforcement. Can you see the problem yet? There's been examples. There's been multiple examples of people who are driving along with large quantities of cash. Now, why they have that cash, nobody knows. Or I should say they know, but very often, you know, the law enforcement doesn't know. There have been examples where people were going to buy a car, in another town or another state, and they brought cash. There were times when people were moving from one location to another, so they had cashed out their accounts in one city and used cash to get to open accounts in new cities. Whatever reason, they get pulled over on a traffic stop, you know, speeding, failing to use a turn signal. The officer sees the cash, assumes that it's from some criminal activity, and therefore confiscates it. Now, there's a couple of interesting twists to how this often works. By the way, another great example was there was a family, the son was accused of, and I believe eventually convicted of, drug trafficking. So the police actually seized the parents' house because he lived with his parents and he was in the middle of a criminal activity. So they actually seized their house, not because they had done anything wrong and they were the legal owners of the house, but because the son happened to live there. But a couple of interesting twists. One, frequently what happens is they don't charge the person, they charge the asset, leading to such ridiculous cases as, I believe it was the state of New York versus $100,000 in cash. How does $100,000 in cash commit a crime to be charged? But then again, that's the legal gymnastics that they go through to try and justify this. The other is, you're assumed, your asset is assumed guilty until proven innocent, meaning when the law enforcement steals your money, right? This isn't a forfeiture, this is a theft. When they steal your money without due process of law, you then have to prove that you didn't acquire it through an illegal asset, which completely turns our so-called justice system on its head. Now, there have been several localities and several states that are working towards ending civil asset forfeiture within their jurisdictions. New York is one of the latest. Back in January, a bill was introduced to the New York Assembly that would end civil asset forfeiture within the state. Now, again, if there's a proper due process is defined as a process, either governmental or judicial, that is designed to protect the rights of the individual. Meaning, if the officer has probable cause, not just an inkling, they have probable cause that the asset is the product of illegal activity, then they can get a warrant and they can seize it. But that's the problem. You've got to have probable cause. And just seeing someone driving around with $10,000 doesn't make that probable cause. Now, part of the problem with some of these state laws is they ignore a tricky loophole that the feds have tried to put in place. See, there's a federal civil asset forfeiture program. So imagine, here you are, you're a police chief, you're a sheriff's deputy, you're a sheriff, and here's this civil asset forfeiture money, and we could really use that money to pay for more officers, for more deputies, for more equipment. But the state turns around and says, hey, guess what? We're not going to let you use civil asset forfeiture anymore. Well, the feds come along and say, hey, make it a federal case. Hand the case over to us, and we'll cut you in for a piece of the action. Now, if that sounds like something right out of a gangster movie, it's because it is. There's the federal government bypassing the Constitution and using this money as an incentive, meaning there's now an incentive for law enforcement to simply declare assets as the product of illegal activity so that they can seize it, so they can steal it. Right? It's just plain up theft. And of course, these officers, they all carry guns. So this is literally armed robbery. This is armed robbery by these government actors, these law enforcement actors. And it really is a disgusting it is a disgusting set of actions of our governments preying on their own people. Now, some people may think that the civil asset forfeiture was ended with the Supreme Court case Tibbs versus Indiana. But that's another one of those, it was a very limited decision, didn't really get rid of it, just kind of played these little games, and we still need to work on it. Now, the good news is, if you live in New York, the bill in front of the Assembly not only prohibits civil asset forfeiture, it also prohibits actors within the state from participating in the federal, what they call the equitable sharing program, which is just a euphemism for their own civil asset theft. Now, there are more subtle ways for the government to steal from you. Well, for example, we have all these electric vehicle tax credits. That's right. There's nothing in the Constitution that says Congress can collect taxes to incent people to buy certain things. That's what these tax credits are. By the way, it's not just EVs. It's solar panels. It's wind. It's all this stuff where the federal government says we're going to steal from the American people to incent them to buy something we want. Kind of like the Tocqueville warned us that the United States will exist until Congress realizes it can bribe the American people with their own money. Now, currently, you can get a tax credit of up to $7,500 if you buy a sport utility electric vehicle. See, if it's just a regular, like a Tesla or a Volt, you get one tax credit. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. But if you buy an SUV electric vehicle, well, that tax credit goes up to $7,500. Now, how does this scam work? Well, under the Inflation Reduction Act, which, by the way, had nothing to do with reducing inflation, if you buy a car that's priced up to $55,000, you can get this tax credit of up to $7,500. But if you buy an SUV electric vehicle, the price can go up to $80,000 and get that tax credit. Well, that's interesting. So what they've done, what the IRS has done, basically, we're going to rewrite the definitions. We're going to say what they call a crossover vehicle is now going to be considered an SUV. Now, what is a crossover vehicle? Well, the ones I've seen are basically what we used to call station wagons. They're kind of a sporty station wagon, right? It's a car that is, you know, maybe a little larger, maybe has a little more cargo capacity. But it's, again, it's the IRS simply making rules up out of thin air to separate the American people from their money and to bribe other American people to do what the federal government wants, that is, ignore physics, ignore reality, ignore the environment, just buy that electric vehicle. And sometimes, you know what, the government's just, they're right out, and they're in your face about the theft. For example, in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023, i.e. the omnibus bill, the porculous bill, the Congress appropriated $45 billion for the Department of Education, of which $20 billion is designated for things such as after-school programs, learning enrichment programs, social and emotional learning programs. In other words, to take your children and mold them so that they're ready for school. There's another $18.4 billion, what are called Title I-A grants. They can be used for things like tutoring, preschool and after-school programs, summer activities, basically things other than actually educating the children. The Department of Education is also going to spend another $1.3 billion on after-school learning centers and almost $15 billion on the National School Lunch Program. Now, understand, you read the Constitution. Education is not a power delegated to the United States. Regulating it, subsidizing it, providing for it, that is not a power delegated to the United States. This is all embezzlement. Of course, they hid it in the Consolidated Appropriations Act so that you wouldn't know it was there until it was too late. And I'm still waiting for anyone in any school district to actually provide data on what it costs them to comply with all the regulations that comes with all this supposedly free money from the federal government. See, we have to ask ourselves, what are we more interested? Are we interested in their money or our freedom? See, all the money that the federal government is spending on in preparing your students for school, supposedly, is indoctrinating them to not only be good little government servants, but to be dependent on government for everything, to pay for everything. Now, some of these programs, you know what, except for the fact that they're federal level, they may make sense. Do cities and towns and states want to pay for low-income families to have access to things like tutoring and after-school programs and discounted or free lunches? That's probably, I don't have a problem with states doing it because states, unless their state constitution doesn't allow them to, states have that have the authority. It's the federal government doing it that I have a problem with. See, you know, people, I'm sure I'm going to hear, Paul, you just hate kids. No, I don't hate kids, which is why I don't want them robbed of their rights and their freedoms by federal bureaucracies, by federal criminal bureaucracies. Simply in the name of, well, we've got to do something. Because you know what I don't see? With the trillions of dollars spent to educate our children, America spends, on average, more per student than almost every other country in the world. I think there may be one that spends more. But our educational outcomes are some of the lowest in the developed world, in the first world. We're spending all this money, and we're not getting an outcome from it. But yet, what's the answer? We'll just spend more money. And the more money we spend, the worse the outcomes. And we spend more money. See, this is what happens when you give up your freedom for their money. I mean, you're like Esau, right? You're hungry, and you'll trade your birthright for a bowl of lentils. But you never consider the long-term cost. And these are just some of the examples of the theft, of the armed robbery being done by governments at all levels. They're saying, you know, do it our way or we'll destroy your life. take our money or else, or just give us your money or else. You know, the American people have been bribed, they've been brainwashed into believing that the government's there to pay for everything and that money doesn't come from us. It's magic money. I remember the interview on the street of a lady. She was asked, you know, back under the Obama administration, where's he getting? Well, this Obama money, where's he getting it? I don't know, his stash. We forget that the only money the federal government has, or any government has, comes from the people. Which is why the de Tocqueville quote is so prescient, that America, the United States, will continue to exist until Congress realizes it can bribe the American people with their own money. Now, I've got some other things to look at. Some of the states that are actually trying to shift things around, maybe make some differences here, but I have another break coming up. Now, personally, I think the information I bring here to the Constitution Study is really worth your time and effort, but that's up to you. But you can also find out more at AmericaOutloud.com. See, there are lots of other voices. Some agree with me, some don't. But it's a great place to get more information, news, and highlights about what's going on in the world. More important than ever, this is information. These are tools you can use to not just educate yourself, but friends, family, neighbors. So do me a favor. Go to America Out Loud. Make it a daily stop. I do. Take the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, and use them to help others. To share this information. By doing so, that is how we can secure the blessings of liberty, not just to ourselves, but to our posterity.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. Well, we know you because we are you. AmericaOutloud.com. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio, the liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoin the Constitution Study. That's right, we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free. And today, we're asking a simple question. Their money or your freedom? We've talked already about ways that governments have been simply flat-out armed robbery, taking money from their people through excess proceeds on tax foreclosures to civil asset forfeiture. We looked at a couple of other examples as how the federal government is stealing your money, whether it's the IRS, you know, basically trying to expand who gets tax credits without any legal authority to do so, or the federal government simply stealing your money and then spending it on programs to, indoctrinate our children to be good little slaves to government. But I have a couple other areas I want to look at before we run out of time today. And this first one you may find at least you may find my stance a little controversial. Now, I'm sure you've all heard about banks that are using ESG as an excuse. Environmental, social governance as a tool to basically deny banking services to certain businesses, certain industries. Everything from, first Obama tried to get the banks and credit cards to stop doing business with gun dealers. We saw it coming through with, again, not just gun dealers, but other businesses. And people got really fed up with banks basically weaponizing themselves politically. So you didn't go to a bank just to do financial business. They wanted to know all about your social, your environmental, they wanted to know your political stance on things before they do business with you. So, of course, the response of any federal congressman, we got to have a law. So Senator Cramer from North Dakota reintroduced what he calls a Fair Access to Bank Act. And he claims it's there to prevent the weaponization of the financial system. Now, I haven't read all the bill, but as I understand it, if you are a bank or a credit union with assets over $10 billion, if you violated the, if you refuse to do business with a legally compliant business, you could pay a fine of up to $10,000 per violation. Now, this is one of those where I understand the sentiment, but it's the long-term consequences that I'm concerned about. See, here's the problem. So you've got a legally compliant business. Okay. What happens when, Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer cram through a bill that says AR-15s are illegal? Now, the Constitution says that's void. No, you didn't have that authority. It violates the Constitution. Doesn't matter. So now you have a bank that says, we're not going to do business with you because, you once sold AR-15s. Or you're still trying to sell AR-15s. Or you're suing to be able to sell AR-15s. Who decides legally compliant? Now all of a sudden, if you sell AR-15s, or guess what? What if you sell raw milk? See, under the USDA, there's a lot of places where you're not supposed to sell raw milk. See, this could easily just expand into all directions. What happens if you take the federal government takes the lead of California and says, hey, if you publish anything on the web that contradicts the WHO when it comes to COVID-19, that's no longer a legally compliant business. Now, here's the way I prefer to deal with this. See, I don't trust government because the same government that will protect you in your firearm business or your abortion business is the same government that can attack you for your firearm business or your abortion business. So here's how I look at things. Here's what I do. I use local bank. Well, actually, I have two local banks and I have one national bank that I work with. I've always had multiple accounts. I've always split up my money that way. It just makes me feel better. But let me give you an example. I was looking for a new local bank. And there was a bank I was considering. And simply by consequence, by coincidence, I was talking to an acquaintance of mine who said he had a problem dealing with that bank. And the problem he had to deal with privacy of his information. Now, why do I love a local bank? Well, because if I was concerned about the policies at a national bank, I'd call an 800 number, I'd get bounced around a voicemail system, and I'd get some platitudes, and I'd probably never talk to a human being. And if I did, it would take forever. But guess what? This local bank that I was considering doing business with, not only were there local people there, I actually knew one of them. So I reached out and I said, hey, this person described this situation. it raises concerns for me before I do business with your bank. I want to know what was going on. This person didn't know. She put me in touch with someone else who explained the situation, and they explained it to my satisfaction, so I open an account with that bank. So now I have three banks I do business with regularly, right? I have a national bank and two different local banks. Now, why do I do that? Well, the national bank actually came about because when I moved from New York to Tennessee, I didn't know any of the local banks. I wanted a national bank to deal with my finances during the move. So I had a set, you know, I do a lot of online bill pay. You know, I wanted a something where it'd be the same between New York and Tennessee. And by the way, every so often I consider just dropping them because, trust me, if they go ESG, they're gone. I won't do business with them anymore, which means I have two banks still I can do business with, which is kind of neat, right? Because if I don't like what one bank does, I move my accounts over to the other bank, I drop the bad bank, and I find another bank. Which means if a bank starts doing, you know, less what? If the national bank goes ESG on me, they lose my account, no one's going to bat an eye. That's not even a rounding error on a rounding error in that particular bank. The local banks may notice, though. See, that's the thing is, if banks are businesses, and if we don't like the way they do business, the answer is not to get the bully Uncle Sam to change them. The answer is you do business somewhere else. You don't have a right to do business with a particular bank. You have the right to find the bank that will do business the way you're willing to do business. And if you can't find one, well, you're willing to find somebody to work with you to create one. So while I understand the frustration about the weaponization of so many of these banks, to me, the answer is not you force the banks. The answer is you find a local bank. Let's get back to these, you know, mom and pop banks. I remember, I'm old enough to remember when I had a guy at the bank. My father introduced me to him when I turned 18, 19 years old, as someone I would do business with. And I did business with him. Yes, he represented the bank. And I did. I loved it. I used to be able when I was in working with some friends of mine, I could call up and get a short-term loan with a phone call. And all I had to do is go in and sign the paperwork and things were done. It was personal. How do we get back to that? We get back to that by supporting banks, local banks, where you can talk to actual people and you can make sure they're working in a way you're comfortable with. And if they're not, let them know. You'll take your business elsewhere. See, rather than getting bully Uncle Sam to fix it, how about we the people fix it? Now, here's another one. And this has been going around for a while. I first heard about this back when I first moved to Tennessee and I actually met with my state rep and state senator. See, one of the problems people are concerned about is this move towards electric vehicles means those vehicles are not paying gas tax. See, when you buy gasoline, there's taxes on it. In fact, I'm old enough to remember when they used to list out all the individual taxes. But part of that tax is both state and federal gasoline taxes, which are supposed to be used to maintain the roads and bridges and whatnot. But as we move away, as government is pushing us away from gasoline-powered cars toward electric-powered cars, where's that tax revenue going to come from? Oops. Now, there's a couple ways that this can be dealt with. Virginia has a new highway use fee that for electric and high-efficiency gas vehicles that is on top of the regular existing vehicle registration. Meaning if you're an electric vehicle and you don't pay gas tax, or you're a high-efficiency vehicle and you pay very much less gas tax, you pay an extra fee when you renew the registration on your vehicle. Now, of course, some people complain about that. That's not to be surprised, right? If you bought an electric vehicle or a high-efficiency gas vehicle to save money and then all of a sudden you're getting charged extra fees for it, that kind of, well, takes some of the shine off the apple. But in 2022, Virginia has a pilot program that rather than paying the HUF as a calculated fee on your registration, you would pay based on the number of miles you drive. Now, according to the report I'm reading, on average, the average Virginian drives about 11,600 miles per year. Now, if you go to the mileage choice program and you drive less than 11,600 miles a year, well, you'll save a little bit of money. Now, of course, if you drive more than 11,600 miles, you're going to pay extra money. But here's the part. The miles are recorded by a device installed in your car connected to your smartphone. Do you know what that means? Because to me, that's an interesting question. How are the miles being recorded? Is this device connected to a wheel sensor or a transmission? Or is it simply using GPS? See, if the device records the wheel spin, if it's based on the wheels rotating, well, that's a bit intrusive, but not nearly as bad. If, on the other hand, they use a much simpler GPS, well, then now the state of Virginia knows where your car is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, of course, Virginia isn't the only state doing this. Oregon and Utah have similar programs. I know it's being considered in my home state of Tennessee. So it's one of those where, oh, sure, we'll just let the government track wherever you are. That has to be a serious concern. How are you tracking those miles? Now, before I go today, there's a couple of other interesting articles I want to pass along. Now, by now, you've probably heard, it's been in the news a little bit, back last year, several counties in Oregon passed resolutions saying they want to leave Oregon and become part of Idaho. And I've talked about that, you know, the idea of enlarging, you know, moving counties from one state to another has never been done in the United States before. I know people say, well, no, you've got, you know, West Virginia and Tennessee. No, these were new states created out of the territory of other states. This is talking about moving territory from one state to another. And it's got a lot of issues. One of the issues is, well, does Idaho want these states? Well, the Idaho House of Representatives have passed what they call a memorial calling for talks between Idaho and Oregon about making some of those rural Oregon counties part of what are now Idaho, what will now be called Greater Idaho. So it appears at least some of the representatives in Idaho are interested in pursuing this. Who knows? Idaho and Oregon will sit down and see if they can play Let's Make a Deal. Now, this next and final story, I kind of like because I'm kind of part of the story. So the recent results from the U.S. Census has found that there are two states that are neck and neck for an honor I don't think they really want. See, they're tied for the highest population decline between April of 2020 and July of 2022, more than any other state. Now take a guess at which states are tied for the greatest population decline in those roughly 2 years. That's right, California and New York. Over 1 million residents have left the empire and the communist state over that 2 year period. At least according to the LA Times. They looked at the census data, they found 524,079 people left New York. And California lost 508,903 residents during that time alone. Now compare that to Florida and Texas. They gained the most states. Florida gained 706,597 residents, and Texas 884,144 residents in that same time period. See, what does that mean? See, you can move. I know there's a lot of issues with moving. There, you know, there's not just family, there's expenses, there's a lot involved in it. But if things truly get bad, you can move. Which, by the way, really pisses California Governor Newsom off so much that he's trying to collect income tax from people who left his state. But that's a story I dealt with a couple weeks ago. But I like this because I escaped the empire. Granted, it was back in 2015, so I'm not a part of these numbers. But it's the trend. And the trend has a couple of interesting effects. One is, yeah, you have states like New York and California. They're losing residents. They're losing tax revenue. And they are losing representation in the House of Representatives. But it's also leading to the polarization of the country. Because the people leaving New York and California are not the communists, not the empirists. They're not the ones that want to be regulated to death. They're the ones that want to live free. So that means states like California will become more communist. New York will become more imperial. And Florida and Texas and, yes, my own Tennessee will become more freedom-minded. See, that's the decision we make. That's the opportunity we have to simply, you know, if a state is going beyond the pale, what will you give up? Will you trade the comfort of living in a familiar location for your freedom, for your rights and liberty? Would you trade being close to friends and family for your liberty? Put the other way. Will you come in from the forest with all your freedoms and rights and liberty intact and trade them just because it was too much work to move somewhere else? Now, please share the news. People can hear the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. They can also listen on podcasts. Most episodes go to podcasts a day or two after they're heard on the radio. Find them on your favorite podcast app. But do me a favor, subscribe, rate, review the show, especially on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. You can find all the links at the homepage of AmericaOutloud.com. But as I said, share them. Share them far, share them wide, so you can help all of us share the blessings of liberty.